Well, it is that time of the week. It's almost Easter, and we've got Cheryl and Dr. Kimberly Earl here. Oh, my goodness.
You got there. You got there.
I got the right name
end.
This
yes.
week. For pet chat. Now, Cheryl, I notice you've got a little Easter bunny pin on, so I'm assuming we are talking about Easter.
I know. We're going to talk about Easter and a few of the hazards that exist with our cats and dogs around this celebrational time.
Excellent. And Dr. Kimberly Earl, are you going to talk about chocolate?
Can.
At all?
Absolutely.
I know.
Sure.
I know it's something.
Because who doesn't want to talk about chocolate?
I know. Like, Dr. David Tabrett talked about it last week, but it's always good to sort of remind people about the older chocolate and pets.
Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah. They're not a good combination.
No.
No. We've got Heather from Barnsley on the line. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for holding. Now, you've got a new puppy.
I've only had her 3 days. She's an Italian greyhound. But anyway, the owner gave me some little tiny balls in the dry food. I don't know what the name of it is. But she's supposed to have that of a morning, and she has a little drink of milk. But she won't eat it of a morning. She has a little tiny bit of milk. But lunchtime, she tries to get the big dog's dinner.
Yep.
And but tea time, I've been giving her some mints and vegetable, and she hoes into that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering whether she can have eggs, because the other dogs have half an egg in it, because they're used to eating with it when we eat. They have a half an egg omelette.
Yeah. How old is the puppy?
He's only 9 weeks old.
Yeah, okay. So the big issue that we have with puppies is that they're growing, and for her bones and joints to grow properly, we really need her food to be really well balanced. And the puppy food is the thing that's going to be the most balanced for her. Now, I'm not opposed to giving small amounts of toppers and things like that, but when you're adding a lot of mints, a lot of egg, those sorts of things to food for her, we're actually overloading her protein levels, and we're going to actually reduce her appropriate levels of calcium and things like that. So we actually need to push through and try to encourage her to eat more of the puppy food where possible. And she's a little tiny dog, right? Italian greyhounds are not very big. So a full egg for her, that's a meal. She won't eat anything else outside of that because she'll be full. So remember, she's got a little tiny stomach. So I would continue to encourage her to eat the puppy food. I would, her evening meal, I would give her puppy food with just a small topper of the mints and veggies, things like that. Because the reality is that stuff that smells really good and is a bit extra tasty, she will want to fill up on that without eating the stuff that's a little bit more bland, but is the stuff that's really well balanced and is going to, sort of help her to grow optimally and keep her joints and bones doing what we need them to do. So they're like children. They will eat what they want, not what they need. And so you as her, you know, pet parent need to make sure that you're sort of encouraging her to do that. Now, her eating a small amount of the big dog's food is not really a major issue. That's not uncommon for a puppy to want to sort of emulate what the bigger dog is doing.
Same as what I give her, they have the same. They have the mint and the veggies and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've got to watch her doing that. But can she have milk still?
She can, but she doesn't need it. Like, there's no nutritional benefit to milk, and it potentially will cause, a bit of stomach upset and things like that. Okay. So I would encourage her encourage you just to get her onto water, because she's not, she's weaned at 9 weeks. There's no benefit from her having milk. And again, it's probably just teaching her that, if I hold out, I'll get something that's really yummy. Whereas what we want her to do is to eat the sort of the healthy stuff. So, her puppy food with a little bit of a topper of the other stuff just to flavor can be really helpful. We want, about 80 to 85% of her diet to be that good quality puppy food.
What's a good puppy food?
Anything that's name brand, that's not grain free. I would say buy the bag that is, I guess, the highest quality brand that you're going to be able to sustainably afford. It doesn't have to be the most expensive. And a lot of the boutique foods are really, really expensive, but not necessarily better quality. So I would go with one of the big name brands. I would go with Advance, Hills, Royal Canin, Purina, those sorts of things that are well established, have lots of research behind them. But we definitely want you to steer clear of grain-free. That is a pet industry fad that is dangerous for dogs. dog. So don't listen to anybody's advice who says you should be on grain-free.
Okay, and I just want to know whether Weet-Bix are very good, not very good for them, or are they good?
Not good. Nope. There's no reason she needs Weet-Bix. She needs a good quality, well-rounded puppy food. Yeah, Weet-Bix is just empty carbs, not going to give her what she needs.
Righty, okay.
Yep.
All
okay?
Right. Yep.
Thanks very much.
Good
Heather.
Luck, Heather.
Thanks for your
Thank
call.
You. Bye.
And Cheryl, we're going to talk about Easter.
Easter, great time of the year, but we often think our visitors are pet friendly, and that's not always the way. So if you've got people coming over to share some meals or staying with you, and you've got some pets that are a little bit anxious, make sure that you're placing them somewhere to keep them nice and calm. So sometimes your cats in particular will just like their quiet space in a bedroom or something like that. So just remember that not everybody is pet friendly. They can leave doors or gates open and our pets can get out. So just be cautious of that. Now, the other thing is, obviously, the chocolate Easter eggs. When we're doing that chocolate hunt, make sure that all the eggs are accounted for, because you'd be surprised how many puppies end up eating the eggs that were left out in the garden that weren't recovered by the children. Mm-hmm. So important to make sure that they don't get any Easter eggs. And not only is the chocolate a problem with the caffeine and theobromine, but also the foil around the eggs. This can also cause problems, can't it, Kimberly?
It can cause a bit of tummy upset and things like that. A tiny bit of foil isn't going to be the end of the world, but a lot of foil can, you know, certainly cause some issues. And we've certainly seen cases where, dogs have gotten into a whole, like, bag of chocolate foil eggs, and that can be very irritating for the gut and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing that, we celebrate with is cross buns.
Yeah.
Now, some hot cross buns have chocolate in them, but some have sultanas and raisins and currants. Now, these are super dangerous. So, we sort of just don't think about things like that. You'd leave them on the bench. And if you've got a counter surfer that comes along, that bag will just go off there and the dog will become quite unwell. So what happens with the sultanas? What's the story behind that, Kimberly?
Yeah, so we now, it's actually a relatively recent sort of discovery, but sultanas and other dried fruits that are sort of similar. So like you said, currants, things like that. In the fruit as it's growing, there's a product called tartaric acid, which is what goes into cream of tartar that we use sometimes in cooking. And tartaric acid has been shown to be toxic for dogs, for their kidneys. And it's not a dose-dependent toxin, or at least in terms of when an animal eats grapes or gets into the hot cross buns, it's not necessarily dose-dependent, because different variety of grapes and at different stages of their growth and harvesting cycle, and dependent on how they've been stored, they will release or store different levels of tartaric acid. So people have often said, oh, well, my dog, eats grapes all the time, doesn't have a problem. But there have absolutely been cases of dogs who have eaten, and large dogs, not even little dogs, who have eaten, 2, 4, 6 grapes, and they've gone into fulminant kidney failure. And the reason for that is because it really has a lot to do with the individual grape at the time, how much tartaric acid it has had stored in it at the time that they were ingested. So there's lots of dogs who live on properties, out in the Hunter Valley, who are, they're grape eaters and they do okay. But then we absolutely can see toxicity, and we've certainly seen it from hot cross buns, things like that. So we don't yet understand how the harvest, how the storage, how the cooking does not get rid of tartaric acid. It is there, it's in the fruit. So there isn't anything you can do. Drying it probably, so when we have craisins and things like that, probably concentrates the tartaric acid, because you lose the moisture. And so the tartaric acid is actually becoming more concentrated. And that is the part that we believe is the toxic thing. So when we talk about dogs who have had hot cross buns, Please don't wait and see whether your dog shows signs, because it's going to be too late by that time. And because this is not dose dependent, it's not about did your dog eat 1 hot cross bun, did your dog eat 4 hot cross buns. It could be that the fruit that is in that particular batch of hot cross buns could be really, really dangerous, and 1 hot cross bun might be enough. Your friend's dog down the road bought it from a different shop. those particular fruit in that hot cross buns might not be as potent. So their dog might eat three and be okay. But there's also going to be an individual variation in the dog. So we're always going to be better off to treat this as an emergency. Get your dog into a vet, make them vomit straight away so that we don't have to deal with problems.
Yeah, and this is another thing too. Just check if your vet's opened over the Easter period. If not, you're going to need to, you know, find a vet like the emergency vet that's open,
right?
Because
yep.
not everybody is going to be open. So having that sort of covered and storing the phone numbers in your, you know, in your phone is a really good idea.
Yep, absolutely.
The other thing that's an issue at Easter time, and we often celebrate with Easter lilies,
and
lilies are just notorious for toxicity for cats.
Yep.
And it's not just like the flower, it's the stamen, it's the pollen, it's the leaves, it's even the water that is holding in the flowers in the vase. If cats drink that or brush against it, this causes a problem. Mm-hmm. So what happens there, Kimberly? What's the problem with lilies with cats?
Well, it's actually also kidney failure, but the mechanism is really different. But cats have quite a different sort of kidney system, and they are not very good at metabolizing certain products. Things like paracetamol, things like lilies are really, really highly toxic to cats. And they literally will go into kidney failure and it just burns out their kidneys. There's nothing left of them. So any household that has cats, just don't even bring a lily into your house, because there is no single part of the lily that is safe. And we've absolutely, again, seen cases where, you know, the cat brushes up against a bit of pollen on the lily. You know, they have those really heavy pollen.
Rustic looking.
And then they groom the pollen off of their fur, and they get into serious trouble. It's very hard to turn those cats around. So, you know, if you have cats, just don't even bring the lilies into your house, because I would really say it's not very safe at all.
Yeah.
Dogs aren't a problem. So dogs and lilies aren't a major issue. They might get a bit of tummy upset, but their kidneys will handle that, whereas cats just aren't going to survive it. Or very rarely.
And the other thing is too, with food, this is a time that we celebrate a lot, and we tend to sort of have
the Easter ham.
Yeah, the ham, and you discard the fat and the skin. And now if you've got a dog that goes in the garbage, or, you know, sees that, it's opportunist, we're going to have another sick dog. So the other thing, recently I saw a skewer that had been eaten by a dog that had passed through the dog and perforated
or
through the skin.
Yeah.
So we need just to be mindful what we're putting in the bin or taking it straight out to the garbage, so that there's no problems. So,
and what your visitors are feeding the dog.
Keep in mind. And so just be on the lookout, keep things safe, but also like seek help early.
Yes.
Because particularly over these long weekends, the emergency vets are going to be really busy, and the wait time could be really long. And so if you've already sat and watched your dog or your cat for, you know, 2-3 hours at home, and then you get in there and they're, you know, there's a long wait there to get seen, it's going to be really detrimental to your pet.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got another dog question from Jess from Maitland. Thanks for holding, Jess. You want to know how to deter dogs from digging where they shouldn't.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking the call. We've got two dogs, and they're sort of destroying some very expensive landscaping that's been done with their digging.
Oh, dear.
I just don't know how to deter them. I've sprinkled chili powder around, and I don't know if that's bad, if that's going to really like upset them or just looking for like a sort of
solution.
So,
I mean, there are lots of, it's hard because digging for dogs is a sort of a natural behavior, right? So, vigilance is always the ideal thing, but you can't always be vigilant. Lots of people swear by putting dog poo in the hole. So if they're digging and you collect their poo and you stick it in the hole, then they tend to not go back to the same hole. That doesn't prevent them from starting another hole, though. And then what it means is that you have multiple holes through your lawn that are now full of dog poo. So that's like, really appealing, but it can be effective. I think giving them, you know, teaching dogs, giving them an area where they can dig that's out of sight or maybe that has a sand pit can be really, really helpful. If they're just digging with their paws, chili powder is not likely to be major. I mean, it's probably not going to be that effective, right? Chili powder is going to potentially work if they get down and they're pulling grass out with their noses, things like that. And the thing we have to be a bit mindful of is if they get the chili powder on their feet and then they go and lick their feet, that could cause a little bit of irritation. But unless they're getting a massive dose, I think it's unlikely that they're going to, you know, come to any really serious harm. But I don't know that that's going to actually be beneficial. Really, what we want to do is make sure that we're making sure that these dogs have a lot of exercise outside of the yard. You know, if you can, take them somewhere where they can dig, where they can burn off that energy. And if they're well stimulated and getting a lot of exercise, then hopefully once they come back home, they're going to be a little bit more just chilled and relaxed. And are they puppies or are they adult dogs?
One's a puppy and one is a two-year-old.
They're both,
yeah. They have a couple of acres to run around.
Oh, right. and they've
they,
picked...
They
they've...
have lots of, like, yeah, lots of area for digging, and they've just chosen right on the house.
Yeah, that's tricky. Yeah. I mean, as a general rule, we just, you know, the standard training things, try not to let them practice what we don't want them to get in the habit of doing. So trying to block off those areas in the short term if you can. It's a tricky one because it's, again, a situation where we're trying to prevent a normal behavior from happening. But it's, of course, it's unpalatable for us, particularly if you've spent a lot of money to landscape those areas. Any other thoughts, Cheryl?
I think covering over the areas, like you said, either fencing it off is a really good idea, because the walking, that's they just got to have so much more stimuli than they're probably getting. Some dogs will particularly females will dig to get cooler. So if they haven't got an area that gives them shade, they'll often dig to just get a bit cooler.
And even dogs on properties, you know, people often say, oh, my dog's got like loads of space, we've got property. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're utilizing that though for exercise. So actively engaging them in ball chasing or something like that, where you know that they're actually actively running around and really burning off that energy, you know, can be really helpful.
And the other thing, sometimes they can hear little critters in the ground as well. So, you know, they might be hearing things like crickets or something like that. So it may be worth, you know, just checking your soil to see if you do have any things that are encouraging them to dig.
Lawn grubs are a common one for that. Yeah, my dog, I can hear her. She stands there and she gets her nose in and she snuffles, and then you can see her listening. She doesn't dig anymore, thank goodness. But she definitely was a gardener in her past.
Maybe some lawn grub and cricket treatment might be in your weekend, Jess.
Yeah, for sure.
Good luck.
Right, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Jess. Fiona, hi, how are you going?
Oh, I'm well. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Now, you've got a dog that's injured its ACL and now doesn't want to use the doggy door.
That's exactly right. He's just got a bit timid. He kind of used to use it, but he was never 100% loving it. Like, he put his nose in and push it and sort of struggle through. But now, I think because he's got his sore leg, he's even more nervous about going through it. So I took the plastic, like I took the front of it off.
The flap or
I've taken the flap off.
Yep.
But I just wondered if there was anything else I might be able to do.
It's hard because it might be like a lot of dogs, when you watch them go through doggy doors, particularly if they're a small dog and they have to sort of pop through it, they will often use one leg rather than two equally to pop themselves through. And if his preferred leg happens to maybe be his sore leg, he might be feeling really unstable on it, or he's now having to use the other leg because he can't use his preferred leg, and that can make them feel really unstable and uncomfortable as well. Has your dog had treatment for it, like surgery or anything on his ACL ligament?
Well, he hasn't. He's only little. Like, he's a Poodle.
Okay, so he's a small.
Look, he's so little and so light. She said at this age, he's 10, she said, I probably wouldn't
just
do it.
Just wait it out. But you're doing some good medical therapy for arthritis support and things like that?
Well, what we have done is really cut back on his, because he used to love jumping and chasing the ball and twisting and turning. So we don't do any of that now. We just kind of, you know, a bit calmer.
Sure. So, I mean, firstly, I would make sure, like, ACL ligaments are really painful. You talk to any football player who's had an ACL injury, they're painful, and they're also, they make you feel unstable and unsafe often on your knee. So I would chat to your vet about making sure he's on some adequate pain relief or arthritis support, something that's going to help with those, you know, reduce the joint inflammation, make him more comfortable, because that's going to be, if we're not going to address it sort of surgically, then we should be managing it with some medical medical treatment. And there's lots of different options available. We always talk in my clinic about using multimodal therapy. So, you know, using a combination of 2 to 3 or 4 different sort of things to just sort of help support them. Start with that. And then in terms of the actual doggy door itself, we want to be using a lot of positive reinforcement. Treat it like a training tool and actually find some really high value treats and see if you can teach your little old dog, you know, to feel confident and, you know, that good things happen when I go through this door. And that literally might mean having one person on each side of the doggy door with, you know, everybody's got a Ziploc baggie or a little bowl of something really yummy, little morsels of Devon or something. Yeah. And the dog just goes back and forth, back and forth. Now, not a lot every day because we don't want to, you know, injure the leg, but it might be that you spend 3 or 4 minutes, see if you can get him to go back and forth 4 or 5 times and then call it good. And then later on in the day or the next day, do that again. So we build a positive association with going through that door without the flap first. But it's going to require, you know, making sure that the dog's leg is able to, you know, able to withstand that as well. So, yeah, definitely speak to your vet about getting some medical therapy on board just to make sure that, you know, that we're pain free as well.
Okay, lovely. Okay. Thank you so much for your help. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thanks a lot, Fiona.
Bye-bye.
Got Debbie from Tanilba Bay on the phone. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. You've got a 3-year-old tricolour Jack Russell that's overweight, although active.
Very, very active. Runs and jumps everywhere.
Yep.
But he just, he's got a middle
yep.
that just will not go down. It's big.
Yeah, okay.
When I compare him to all the other Jack Russells, they're just, yeah.
He's an easy keeper, Debbie. Jack Russells are little dogs, right? And even though they're active, they don't need a lot of food. He's 3 years old, so he's not growing anymore. With dogs, we do find that weight is best, like we have to just control it through diet and how much we're giving them. Portion control is the key. Activity is always good, but you're never going to get a dog to lose weight just by increasing their exercise and their activity levels. It just doesn't happen. And we see it all the time. We see really, really active young dogs and the owners say, but they just run and run and run all day. But, you know, particularly if your dog is eating a good quality sort of kibble food, which is what I feed to my dog, they're good, but they are very energy dense. And so a dog like a Jack Russell, if he's eating more than a quarter of a cup, you know, that's a meal, if not, maybe that's a meal and a half, depending on the variety of the food. And some of the foods, you know, not all kibble foods are made equally. So there are some foods on the market, particularly the ones that are fish-based, that have really, really high fat levels in them. One of the leading brands, I know that their salmon variety is like 18% fat. It's like massive. When we feed a diet food, so a sort of a veterinary level diet food, we're looking at fat levels that are probably in the neighborhood of 7%. So I think if you've got a good, a good quality pet shop or a vet hospital nearby, you go in and actually ask them for a diet food. You would be surprised how much of a difference just converting onto a diet food for the period that we need to get your little Jack Russell, you know, the weight off of him makes a really big difference. I like the Royal Canin one, but Hills has them. Lots of the varieties have them. So just, you know, see what's available. We want something that's easy for you to get a hold of. Obviously, you can order things online. Makes a really big difference. And you can often just do, as a starting point, you can often just do a straight volume, you know, straight across. You take your regular food, move it straight across the same volume with the diet food, and that might even be enough to sort of slim them down. We do sometimes have to actually cut down the portions. Also make sure if you're putting toppers onto your dog's kibble, no pasta, no rice. That's just empty calories. There's no way he needs it. He likes it, doesn't need it. So if you are putting toppers on of meat or veggies, that's fine. Small amounts of meat, decent amount of veggies, but we don't need any extra carbs on there, okay?
No, well, that's what he gets. He gets 120 grams of a night of pet mince mixed with mixed veggies.
Yeah. Do you know that they say 120 grams of meat is the average size serving that a human person should have?
Wow.
So like 120 grams, if the majority of that is protein, pet mince, that's quite a lot for a little dog. So
that's weighed with the veggies.
Yeah, great. Okay, yeah. So lots of veggies, smaller amounts of meat. And then if you do have kibbles, you have kibbles in the house at all, or?
Yeah. He has a small handful of kibble with that.
Yeah.
Meal.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, kibbles, again, very energy dense. So, I would just cut the portion sizes down and see how you go with that. Okay.
Okay. Good luck with that, Debbie. All the best. Next on the line, we've got Steve from Broken Hill. Thanks for calling, Steve. Thanks for holding. We've got a few minutes left.
That's
so,
all right.
Yeah. You've got a 9-month-old chihuahua that keeps licking people's faces.
Yeah. He doesn't stop. He's trying to get, if you sit him on your lap,
yep,
all he wants to do is get up under the chin and the face and lick.
Okay. And he's a, is he fairly happy, like friendly little chihuahua?
Oh, he's got a playmate, the mother.
Yep.
He zooms everywhere, him and they're just full of energy and they burn it off.
Sure. So, I mean, usually when we see a dog who's licking faces and things like that, that's what we'd call an appeasement behavior. It's usually trying to show that he's sort of trying to be appeasing or submitting to you, or that he's not, that he's subordinate to you. And we will see when they're really obsessive about it, we will see that sometimes in dogs that are anxious. Now, in a chihuahua, I mean, he's 9 months old, so he already knows he's at the bottom of the pecking order because he's young. But
you gotta tell him that, though.
Yeah, well, so that was one of the things, because like chihuahuas have been known and certainly can be quite feisty little dogs, and in them that often comes about because they're highly anxious. They can be really worried. Right. They're very little, and so when we see a dog who's constantly, he's like stressed. He's like, oh my god, like I really have to show that I'm subordinate, because what happens if this guy starts to, you know, he gets upset with me, he's going to become aggressive with me. And so I think we see a high number of little chichis that, you know, their baseline anxiety level can be quite high, and they're these little tiny dogs. And so what they do is they can become quite aggressive because they're fearful. And now your little guy doesn't sound like he's fearful, but I would start to think about what can we do to try to help him to be more confident. Training and putting in really good training routines can be really helpful. Lots of positive reinforcement to, so what we want to do is we want to praise him and reward him for being calm. So instead of him being up on your face and licking at you, we want to try to reward him for sitting calmly beside you and not paying so much attention to you. Okay.
Yep.
But
yep.
I would say that if it continues, it's worthwhile potentially having a chat with your local vet or see if there's a local behaviorist, who can help you with some of that. But I would start with putting some really good confident training routines into place.
Well, he loves his smackos.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I think that's the blackmail.
Yeah. Excellent. Good luck with it, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for the call. Bye. Now, we've only got a few seconds left.
Seconds.
45 seconds left, so we're going to have to be quick. Congratulations to Jess from Maitland. You've won the $50 pet food voucher, so we'll get to you this afternoon. We'll give you a call. Also, quickly, our pets of the week. We've got Boston and we've got Ash. Boston is a beautiful male 2-year-old bull Arab cross dog, and we've got Ash, who is a beautiful little grey and white tortoiseshell kitten. So if you want to check them out, you can head to our page 2NURFM.com.au and you'll find those beautiful cats on our pet chat part of the page anyway. So, yeah, we are out of time, literally.
Right to the finish.
Thank you so much.
We'll catch up
with you again on
Pet
Chat.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.